I think we have some students from Loeb University. Would they please stand? Good seeing you. You may be seated. Are you from, is there a campus or facility here in Madison, or are you from, is it Eau Claire where you're centered? Loeb. Pardon me? You're from Madison. Good. Well, welcome. We have a program, and you are part of it, of cleverly entitled Thought with Class. And we invite and are happy to have students from all the initial grades all the way through universities join us for an oral argument. And have you been given materials about the case we're about to hear? Good. And that's part of our program, and you listen to the oral argument, and it's my understanding that you will be meeting after the argument with Justice Bradley, who's been assigned today to meet with students. And she met at the noon hour with students who attended the first two programs. The meeting will be on procedural matters, how we take cases, how we decide cases, writing opinions, releasing opinions. It will not be on the substantive issues of any of the cases we have heard. Counsel and everyone else invited to attend that session. We've met the students. Let me introduce the court to you. I'm Shirley Abrahamson, the Chief Justice. To my right is Justice Ann Walsh Bradley, the justice with whom you'll meet. To her right is an empty chair. Justice David Prosser usually sits in it. He will be not participating in this case. And on the far right is Justice Annette Ziegler. To my immediate left is Justice Patrick Crooks, and to his left, Justice Patience Rogensack, and on the far left, Justice Michael Gableman. That's the lineup for today. And in the first case, 12AP1644, Rachel R. Jackson versus Wisconsin Community Mutual Insurance Group, we will have Lori M. Lubinsky, Attorney Lubinsky, representing Wisconsin Community Mutual Insurance Group. You may proceed, counsel. You have 25 minutes and 5 minutes in rebuttal.
Thank you very much. May it please the court. As the Chief Justice has indicated, my name is Lori Lubinsky. I represent the defendant, Wisconsin County Mutual Insurance Corporation, who I will reflectively just refer to as Wisconsin County Mutual or the insurer throughout my argument. This case is about how far the court is going to interpret and stretch the common and reasonable interpretation of the word use. It is about a statutory construction of the phrase using in the context of a motor vehicle insurance policy that contains terms and provisions that are different than your standard automobile policy that all of us have on our personal automobiles. The policy language in this case is different in many significant respects than what you would see in a typical auto policy. The court is going to be required to construe the terms as used in that policy under the facts of this case. We believe there are two reasons why the Court of Appeals decision should be reversed. First, we believe that Jackson was not using the Lynch vehicle at the time of the accident within the meaning of both the policy and the relevant statute, 632.322H. I'll call that the statute so I don't have to keep reciting the numbers. It's the only statute at issue in this case. Second, we believe the Court of Appeals decision should be reversed because even if Jackson was using the Lynch vehicle, she's not entitled to UIM benefits under the policy because she does not qualify as a UIM insured by using the same vehicle. That's also the underinsured vehicle.
So if she were a passenger in this car, would your argument be the same?
If she were a passenger in the Lynch vehicle?
Yep.
If she were a passenger in the Lynch vehicle, she would not be entitled to benefits under the policy because she would not be engaging in an act in the course and scope of her employment, which is a requirement to meet the definition of insurance.
Let's put her in the scope of employment.
Okay.
She's taken over this car to do something for the employment. So let's take that out. Is she using the car if she's a passenger?
She is, because both the statute and the policy define use to include being a passenger in.
Okay. So that argument would drop out. So what about the next argument that she doesn't fall within the UIM?
That would apply, although I'm uncertain of the hypothetical. How would she be injured? Would she be injured by a third-party tortfeasor? Or would
Lynch drives it and hits something.
Okay, so Lynch drives it, she's in it.
Isn't Lynch the tortfeasor here?
Lynch is the tortfeasor.
Okay. And I'm going to keep him a tortfeasor, so you can have him overturn the car or hit a tree. I don't care what he does. He accelerates when he shouldn't, and he hits somebody else. She's an injured passenger. I'm keeping everything the same, except I'm putting her in the car.
Then my answer to that would be no. There is no insurance coverage under the UIM endorsement because the vehicle in which that she's using is identical to the underinsured motorist, that underinsured motor vehicle that the tortfeasor is operating.
Where do you get that language dealing with exclusion for the identical?
It goes directly from the coverage provided in the insuring agreement in the UIM endorsement. By way of background,
where is it in
I have it right in front of me, actually. If you
have it in front of us.
Right in your briefs at the appendix, page 28.
Okay.
That, and just for your reference only, it's literally the three pages, the next three pages, 28, 29, and 30. Are the UIM endorsement. Those are the three pages that govern the coverage for the potential coverage for this accident. So if you look under 1A, the insuring agreement, it provides, and you all can read it, but basically the insurer will pay sums. The insured is entitled to recover for damages from the owner or driver of an underinsured motor vehicle because of bodily injury.
So far we're okay, right?
So far, yep, you have to look at the definition. So the italicized word insured,
right,
is separately defined in this policy under same page, under Roman numeral 2B.
Got it.
Any person qualifying as insured who's an insured under the regular policy, which basically is an employee who acts in the scope of their employment, while using an automobile.
Okay.
All right.
And in my passenger case, we got him covered. Okay.
Correct.
All right.
Correct. Because she's a passenger, which is under the statute use. Then we go back.
In this case, there's a fight about whether it's a user. Okay.
Correct.
All right.
The first issue in the case is whether there's use, but we're going right to the second issue, which is the contextual argument. So we go back to the coverage, the grant of coverage. How I like to interpret or read these policies is when there's
Wait a minute. Where does it say you can't be a passenger in the underinsured car?
It doesn't say those words.
Where does it say any words that you're interpreting?
Under the coverage 1A, the word under the appendix, page 28.
20 what? 8?
Page 28.
Are you going back to 1A?
1A.
Okay, good.
The definition of insured. Mm-hmm. Then you go down and you say, okay, what is an insured? And I'm going to just abbreviate that to mean an employee working who is using an automobile. So, using that phrase, the coverage says we will pay sums an employee who's working in the course of their employment who uses an automobile is legally entitled to recover as damages from the owner or driver of an underinsured motor vehicle. Mm-hmm. That is a separately defined term.
Which one?
Underinsured motor vehicle. If you flip... Correct.
So where do we find the definition
then
of
Then the
Lynch?
Next page of the appendix, under definitions, item B defines the italicized phrase underinsured motor vehicle.
Okay.
And in essence, it provides a vehicle where there's, and I'm going to abbreviate, not enough coverage
right.
to cover the damages.
All right.
And so what the policy does is it uses two different terms. It defines the term insured to include an individual using an automobile. and then requires through 1A that the that person be entitled to recover damages from an underinsured an owner or operator of an underinsured motor vehicle. And because those terms are defined differently and separately, we contend the only reasonable interpretation is that they are separate. Okay. And that's buttressed by the fact simply that this policy does not, as plaintiff concedes, provide personal and portable coverage, much like all of our general auto policies would. Yes, I'm sorry.
Yeah, okay. Underinsured motor vehicle on 29.
Yep.
So we're going to, now it's a definition. That's what it says under Roman 5. Okay. Underinsured motor vehicle means a land motor vehicle. Lynch's car is a land motor vehicle.
Lynch's car would be a land motor. There's no, I don't dispute that Lynch's car is an underinsured motor vehicle.
All right. That's what I saw. So what we got is a person who is an employee in the scope of employment. I mean, you have to assume
that. Yeah, we do
that.
Have that.
And has been, so they fit under 1A and 2B.
Well, again, I've gone back to they don't fit under 1A because she wasn't using. But if we're going past that argument.
We're going past that.
Okay.
I want to get to the second argument.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that's a little harder.
I don't dispute it. It's more of a contextually based argument that is more difficult than the first. Yes.
Yeah, because we're going to get to what user is. We've got cases on that. We can debate that. But I think in the second one, I don't see where this policy excludes Lynch's car. As you say, it's definitely covered under 5B. Lynch's car is definitely covered under 5B. So how do you get it out? That's my question.
I would concede that there is not a specific exclusion in the policy.
Or exception.
Or exception to an exclusion, correct. It is a contextually based argument based on the separately defined term insured to mean using an automobile versus the vehicle that gives rise to the liability must be an underinsured motor vehicle. And so the argument is because the policy defines those two terms differently and uses different words to identify them, therefore they must be different.
Are you in 1A when you were orally discussing it? Seemed to me that I heard you write in for clarification a word or two in 1A. And if you did, can you tell me again what that is so I can write it in?
I think all I did, Justice, is when the italicized word insured in the sixth word, I just simply substituted, in essence, the definition of that word, which is, we'll simplify it, employee on duty who uses an automobile. And so when I read it, I probably read it as the coverage provides that an employee on duty while using an automobile is entitled to recover damages from the owner or operator of an underinsured motor vehicle. That's probably what I did to answer your question.
Does the omnibus statute have different definitions of use and using depending on which section you're in? Or would the whatever definition we come up with in this case have application in other contexts?
It might have, to answer your second question, it might have application in other contexts. I'd have to think that through a little bit. But to answer your first question, no, the omnibus statute, 632.32, does not separately define use from using. And there are a plethora of court cases that talk about what use is, as Chief Justice has indicated. They're cited in my brief and the opposing brief. But the term use, as opposed to using, is not separately defined. That said, I think the point, I think that you probably are right that the court's decision of what constitutes using, as that term is used in this policy, likely would have application beyond this case and perhaps application to other cases where there are issues involving the use of a motor vehicle.
That was my concern. Thank you.
Yes. I want to turn to the first argument. We've talked a little bit about the second. The first argument is the critical question of whether Jackson was using the Lynch vehicle. And the first thing, I think the briefs have fleshed this out, but I want to point this out, and I will be brief. I think it's very important when you read all of the cases, which I know you will, the Garcia case, all of those use cases, that what you're going to find is the language that the courts were interpreting were those general policies that provide coverage for arising out of the use of a motor vehicle. And we don't have that in this case. We have a very clear definition of insured that requires that the person be using an automobile. And that's significant. It's significant for a couple reasons. Number one, the phrase arising out of the use of a vehicle versus using a vehicle must mean something different. I would suggest to you that the phrase arising out of the use of a motor vehicle can involve present tense, past tense. It's an active voice, not passive voice. Whereas using is a present tense, direct, active involvement. And I would just ask you when you read those cases to keep those things in mind, because I think that the Court of Appeals, when they looked at all those cases, looked past that distinction without addressing it. And it's important because, and here's why, there is a very large body of law that talks about what the words arising out of is, what the phrase arising out of means. That phrase is absent from this policy. So she must be using. Her injury can't arise out of the use. She must be using the Lynch vehicle. That said, I concede and agree that those cases are important for the court to look at. They provide guidance. We're not suggesting you should dismiss them entirely, but what I would suggest is those cases, when you look at them, they have a common theme. And the theme...
But not every one of them.
There are anomalies.
There are what?
Anomalies.
Well, what's Lauber? Is that an anomaly?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
What is about the Lauber case, which says the inherent use of the automobile, that doesn't use arising out of. It's a use case.
It is a use case.
And it's the basic case that's been followed in this court, and it sets forth the standard of is it an inherent. One of our problems, we keep using use to define things, inherent use of the vehicle. Now, your definition of using says driving, operating, manipulating, riding in, and any other use.
Correct. And that's the statutory definition.
Yeah.
And so then we must ask, well, was Jackson driving? She was not. She concedes she was not. Was she operating? She concedes she was not. We'll skip past manipulating. She wasn't riding in. So the only way she's using a vehicle is if she's manipulating or any other use. And go, I think, to the question. It's my understanding that that case talked about how are we going to interpret this any other use? I mean, we've got a statutory
definition. I don't know that that was the definition in that case, but it doesn't matter.
The question, I think, is how do we construe any other use when it's within the definition of the word using? And that's difficult. And I think what those cases can be synthesized as saying is we need to look at what's inherent in the use of a motor vehicle.
And that was the Lauf case.
Correct.
That was what they said.
Correct.
And it wasn't a rising out of language in that policy
yes.
In a long time.
And so then we must look at what Jackson did. And the facts of this case, quite simply, are that Jackson was patrolling. She was on airport duty. The Lynch vehicle pulls up, I believe, in the second lane, or not the immediately closest lane, but the one next to it. The Lynch driver asks for directions. They have some communication. She says, and I think this is important because it's been interpreted differently. She says, quote, "I asked him if he could pull over to the curb," end quote. Quoting the appendix at page 73. So she asks him to pull over. He does. They have a verbal exchange. I would also cite the next same page of the appendix at 73. She's asked whether she bends down a bit. "Are you touching the vehicle?" "No." "How far away?" And she says 1 to 2 feet. So she is verbally giving directions through the passenger side to both the passenger and the driver. I believe her testimony is repeatedly. There seemed to be some confusion about where they were going to go. And she says, and just going right from her testimony, she says that because of that confusion, he said, quote, "How am I going to get back into traffic?" end quote. And I, meaning Jackson, said, quote, "I'll go in front of your car. I'll come around and help you get into traffic." And he said, okay, and then she walks around. So the question is somebody in that position, no doubt she was in the scope of her employment, who says, come on over, give some directions to a hotel, I think it was, there's maybe some confusion about where to go, and says, I'll walk in front of your vehicle to allow you to get out. Is that inherent in the use of a motor vehicle? And I would submit to you it is not. It is completely different than each and every one of the cases, and we've gone through those in our brief, where the court finds that the individual is using a motor vehicle.
So if I'm trying to park my car, and my husband is outside screaming at me, turn it this way, turn it that way, is he using the car?
I would submit to you he's not controlling the vehicle. It is.
I didn't ask you about controlling the vehicle. I don't see
no.
That use is defined as control.
But the definition the plaintiff cites of the word manipulating is control. I'm using their definition.
We are not going to say my husband controls me, are we?
Absolutely not.
But he may control me driving in the car.
He, in theory, in some hypothetical, could he control you driving the car? Perhaps. I would agree he's never going to control you, Chief Justice. But at a certain point, we need to ask, what is control of a vehicle?
Well,
and if it is, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I don't see the word control, so I'm not going to go there.
I was using that as the definition cited by the plaintiff for the word manipulating. The statute does use the word manipulating.
What about the case where, now if I get the facts right, I think it was a driver who is giving directions to a child crossing the street, and I think that was within the definition of use of the car.
Yeah, the driver, that was the Garcia case. The driver is sitting in his running vehicle. He's at, I believe, a swimming pool, if my memory serves. I believe he gives directions to his own daughter. I may be mistaken on that, but to a child, and motions while he is in the vehicle with the car running to the child to cross. The child's then injured by a tortfeasor. The question in that case was, is the driver using the vehicle? And the court looked at what he was doing. He was sitting in the vehicle, it was running, and he was gesturing towards the child. The court didn't say he was using it because he was controlling the actions of the juvenile. The court said he was operating the motor vehicle because he was sitting in and operating his car. And I think that's the critical difference. The use in Garcia did not involve the directions to the juvenile. It involved his operation of his own motor vehicle. And I think if you look at Garcia and you look at Thompson and Kemp and Tramp, those cases, they all kind of, they can be distilled into how are we going to define that and any other use? And what the court's really looking, as Chief Justice has indicated, is what is inherent in the operation of a motor vehicle? And that can be obviously riding in, operating, controlling it, and I would accept that definition from plaintiff's counsel of the word manipulating. And I would suggest to you that under the facts of this case, there a reasonable person outside this courtroom would not look at what Ms. Jackson did to say she was controlling that vehicle. She was there giving directions. She was explaining what hotel to go to. They didn't understand. She said, I'll help you. She goes around. Is that control of a vehicle?
Do you think the analysis would be any different if she were putting luggage in the vehicle?
No. I don't think the analysis would change because putting luggage in and out of a vehicle is not inherent with its use.
Loading and unloading the vehicle?
And loading and unloading in most auto policies is separately covered. But there is no coverage in this UIM, this three-page UIM endorsement for loading and unloading. It has to be something inherent with the use. There's one case, there's the dog That was the Tramp case where somebody was leashing a dog onto a car. And the court said because you were manipulating the leash in a way to attach to the car, that was the use of the car. And I think if you read into that case, how I saw it was the court was looking at, do people use their vehicle to attach things to, like a boat, like a trailer, like a dog leash? And loading and unloading of a vehicle is very different. It'd be no different than if Ms. Jackson went up and gave somebody a parking ticket. It'd be no different if somebody put their bags down next to their car and said, can you help me move these because I need to get, you know, another car, another individual, I need to get these bags out of the way. That's not what our common everyday meaning of the word use of a vehicle.
Counsel?
Yes.
You've many times now talked about the ordinary person, common, ordinary, everyday use. I'm still lingering on your discussion regarding the second issue, the one vehicle issue. And I'm lingering on it with a smile because you talk about it with such gusto, passive voice and active voice. And I love that, but that's not common and ordinary, except between you and me and a handful of other people who care about that. So it seems to me the stronger of your arguments is the use argument. In looking at lots of policies as we have over the years, there are canons of construction, and when you have to talk about things like active and passive voice and reading it in, and boy, that's not very clear. And then when you apply the canons of construction, whether it be construction of a contract or specific canons in construction regarding an insurance company, that one vehicle argument does not seem as robust as the user argument. Can you respond to that?
Yes, sure. I would agree with you that the contextually based argument, the second argument, is not as robust as the first argument.
That word.
I completely agree with you, so I'm going to concede that it's not as robust. But the issue of arising out of versus using versus arising out of is not an issue for the second argument.
It's
an issue
for
the first argument. As it relates to that issue, you can, if you're having discomfort with that, what I would suggest is perhaps the words preceding, forget about active and passive voice. Look at what words are used. The term using and the term arising out of the use must mean two different things because they are different words. And if you look at the cases that talk about what arising out of, divorce yourself from using. What is the phrase, and I see my time's up, may I just end
my
statement?
May finish the sentence, yes, and you have 5 minutes in rebuttal.
Thank you. If you look at the cases that talk about what arising out of means, the cases talk about that phrase in very broad vernacular. And that's what gives breadth to all of the court's decisions for arising out of the use. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Strobin.
Yes, good afternoon. Madam Chief Justice, fellow justices, may it please the court. I'm here today on behalf of Rochelle Jackson, a deputy with the Milwaukee County Sheriff's Department. And I'm asking that you affirm the Court of Appeals decision in finding coverage in this case. And I'm asking that you find that there's coverage based on two primary arguments. And I think you have touched on them fairly well and in depth with Attorney Levinsky. First, I'm asking that the Court find that Deputy Jackson was using the vehicle in the context of the policy as well as the statute. And second, I'm asking that you disregard the contextual-based argument stating that Ms. Jackson is not entitled to coverage because she was not injured by an underinsured motor vehicle. And I think, as the comments have traced to this argument, I think that the crux of this issue, and I'm hoping that you recognize this as well, is that the use question that the Court of Appeals touched on is the key question to decide here in this case. And I certainly understand the commentary posed by Attorney Levinsky in regards to the questions of how Ms. Jackson was operating, controlling, or not controlling the vehicle. The reality is, in order to make the determination of what is a use, we have to look at the statute and the policy. And the statute says, using includes driving, operating, manipulating, riding in, and any other use. And not to jump into the grammar discussion, but any other use, the way I read this statute, it includes driving. That doesn't mean it's limited to just what the terminology that's listed here in the statute. And the last word, any other use, I think that could also mean past tense. Now, I don't think that issue even arises to become a part of the analysis in regards to this case with Deputy Jackson. What we have here is a case where a motorist is lost, comes over, is seeking instructions from Deputy Jackson about how to get to a specific hotel. And she says, okay, I'm going to help you, give you some directions. And her deposition testimony states as follows. And she says, I didn't want them to go back toward downtown. I wanted them to go toward Madison. I wanted it to be easier to get to Brookfield. And he said, okay. And he was like, how am I going to get back into traffic? I said, I'll go in front of your car, and I'll come around, and I'll help you get into traffic. And he said, okay. And the passenger said, okay. And by that, you meant it was your intention to walk around in front of the car, around to the driver's side? Answer, right. And because he was right in front of the pedestrian walk as well. Question, so you were helping to get him out of there. Help him to get into traffic to proceed where he was going. And that's exactly what she was doing. She was helping him get back into traffic safely as part of the scope and course of her duties as a sheriff's deputy patrolling at the airport at that time. And even after Mr. Lynch hit her by suddenly accelerating, she exerted control over the car. She said, you realize you just hit me. Park the car. And he did.
Counselor, in this case, Mr. Lynch appears to be the tortfeasor. Does his policy then have liability coverage? I assume it does.
Yes.
But it's not enough to pay for her injuries, which is why you're going back to the same policy, but this time, instead of looking at his actions, you're looking at her actions and trying to bring her under for UIM coverage. Is that what's going on?
Just to clarify, Justice Rogan-Sack, you mentioned the same policy, not the policy of Mr. Lynch, not the liability policy of Mr. Lynch. That was an American Family policy.
All right. So what you're doing then is you're trying to use the policy that's on her squad car to bring in first-party coverage for her because his liability coverage is too low for the accident.
Correct. I'm trying to use the policy that Milwaukee County procured for its employees.
Okay. Do you agree that this policy, which is part of a generalized policy that Milwaukee County has that covers many vehicles as well as other things, is not personal and portable like the usual liability automobile policy is?
Yes. Yeah, correct. I don't have any dispute with that.
Okay. So she can't take it with her wherever she goes?
Correct.
But you want her to take it with her as far as using his car.
Yes.
Isn't that a little inconsistent?
It's not. And the reason is because part of the scope and course of her duties is what this policy was intended to cover when Milwaukee County purchased it. Now, part of the definition of using, and I submit it's not restrictive, and when I say the using is not restrictive, the underinsured motor vehicle part is not restrictive. It's drafted to entitle an insured like Deputy Jackson, when she's acting within the scope and course of her employment, to use other vehicles, and specifically use this vehicle. We're not talking about every vehicle that passed her that day, that just drove by her as she's standing there and it careens into her because the guy was drunk. This is one specific motorist who started an interaction with her.
Well, what about if she's controlling traffic at an intersection that has lights and the lights aren't working properly? So she parks her squad, she comes to the middle of the intersection, and she's telling people to come and telling people to go, and as one person comes up to her, they stop for a minute and say, do I turn left to get to the McDonald's? And she says, yes, and so they turn left, but they get her as they turn left. Is she using the car?
I think that that would depend a little bit more on the facts of that hypothetical.
Well, those are the facts.
Those are the I understand. I think one could certainly argue that she is using that vehicle because she's giving whoever the driver is, him or her, specific directions towards a location. Now, one could certainly argue that case, but I don't think that's the facts that we have presented here today. I think
you argue in your brief that manipulating the vehicle is what applies here.
Correct.
And you say that that's controlling the vehicle, but if she's controlling it, she sure didn't do a very good job because it ran into her.
Correct.
So, I mean, I have a problem with lining up what actually occurred with the language that we're applying here.
There's lots of tandem teams of people driving, parking, you know, construction people attempting to get the mixer into a spot. You know, the example that Chief Justice gave about her husband getting out to help her park. I mean, I've done the same thing with my wife. You know, I don't control her either, obviously, and I can give her suggestions and ask her to try to park it in this particularly tough spot, say you should go this way or that way.
Using the vehicle if your wife is parking it? Parking the car and you're standing outside?
Yes.
You are?
Yes.
And because you're giving her directions on how to park, that's using the vehicle.
We're acting as a team, acting in concert to establish or to get one certain goal, whether that is to get into a parking spot, mm-hmm. whether that is to get into traffic, mm-hmm. whether that is to achieve some other goal, to get the delivery truck.
So the officer standing at the corner that tells the guy how to get to McDonald's, he's acting as a team then too, isn't he? Because he's answering the question, and the guy's following his directions and turning left to get to McDonald's.
I think it depends on a very precise factual inquiry under the situation, and that you have to go back to the Lavler test, which I believe Chief Justice and some others have referred to.
Now, Lavler covers everything. It says make it as broad as possible. That's
correct.
How I interpret Lavler.
Correct. And there's problems with attempting to draw a bright line today that's going to cover everything down the road, because I think today we have a very unique set of factual circumstances, and I think that whatever the decision comes out today, I think is one where, you know, one that's not going to come out today, but obviously the decision that you ultimately decide is going to be an analysis used.
This is the first case that I can recall where we are tagging user to UIM. Do you know of another one?
Not in the state of Wisconsin, Your Honor.
Right. So, I mean, I think it's a pretty significant decision. I think it's more than just a case-by-case kind of analysis that we have to go through. So that's why I'm very concerned about trying to have a firm understanding of what your argument is. And it's the team argument. As long as they're a team, whether they're inside the car or out, if she's never been in the car and is never going to get in the car, they're still a team, and that makes her a user. Is that right?
I think that's a fair characterization
of it. All right.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
So then would you agree with counsel when she said if she were loading or unloading things from the car that would not be using? Or what I'm hearing from you is you think that would be using?
Well, I think that would depend on the particular policy in regards to what it says about loading or unloading. I mean, I believe loading or unloading a vehicle could potentially be using.
Okay.
So that's my perspective on it. It depends on the case law and the specific policy in place here.
Well, some policies include the words loading and unloading as part of using. There are other policies that do not. And I think in the Loeffler case itself, it dealt with both kinds of policies and said it didn't matter because it was part of using. And you have a lot of unloading and loading truck cases that say that's using. And I like my passenger approach because that's covered by riding in. It's not necessarily a team effort. In fact, the passenger talking too much about driving is not a good idea sometimes. But the passenger, if she were a passenger in this car, your position is she's using the car, right? That's right within the definition. And then your position is she's in an underinsured car, right?
Correct.
And it's covered.
Correct.
And there's no exception.
Not one that covers her under this policy. And there has been concerns about, you know, how far the decision may reach. The easy fix for Wisconsin County Mutual is to simply draft an exclusion or draft a specific part of the definition that says, listen, and this is talking about the contextual-based argument that they've made. Listen, this policy doesn't cover the use of the same automobile that's operated by the tortfeasor in case you injure yourself. They could have drafted that within the policy, and they didn't.
Counsel, I'd like to revisit Justice Rogensack's hypothetical where the deputy, rather than helping ease a motor vehicle back into the traffic at Mitchell Field, is directing traffic where the lights have gone out. And in Justice Rogensack's hypothetical, one of the motor vehicles stops to ask directions to a particular destination. And you said, yes, I think then the officer, the deputy, would be using the motor vehicle. What if no driver stopped to ask directions? The officer is directing traffic and indicating whose turn it is to go. Use of the motor vehicle if negligence?
And she's injured by the which driver, Justice Gableman?
The driver that she told it was her turn to go.
And she's injured by, when was that driver paying attention to her directions? I think, again, we get to
Your answer would be yes. I mean, if your logic flows, I don't see how your answer can be anything but yes.
If we're talking about the car that she's specifically directing,
yes,
then yes.
Well, what if we change the scenario to a not uncommon circumstance, and it'll become more common as we enter the seasons of spring and summer, and that is construction season. And a motorist, perhaps myself, comes up to the crest of a hill, and it's not uncommon to encounter municipal workers who are telling me it is either safe to go, and so they're directing me with the sign that says slow on one side and stop on the other. The municipal worker who tells me to go slow by turning the sign that way, and if for some reason my negligence results in the injury of that municipal worker, use of my motor vehicle?
If in the process of that, as you're driving it, you're submitting to that instruction of the municipal worker to slow or stop, I would say yes.
What else would I be doing?
Well, I back up to the situation of if you've got a drunk driver or some other person who, by their negligence, completely disregards the directions of the officer.
I might have a bad memory, but I don't recall that as part of my hypothetical. I'm driving down the road. I want to get to the other side of the hill. I can't see it because of the construction. So I need to depend on the municipal worker who's holding the sign. The sign tells me to proceed.
Yes.
Use. Okay. Yes. Thank you.
Yes.
You know, these provisions are coverage provisions. They cover use, right?
Correct.
They cover the the person insured who is injured by an underinsured motor vehicle. And generally, the rule of construction in insurance policies is you interpret coverage broadly, and you interpret exceptions and exclusions narrowly. So here, if that's true as a rule of construction, using should be interpreted broadly.
Correct. Correct. And that goes all the way back to, again, the Lawler decision, which was quoted again in the Garcia case, where it said, we are to broadly interpret the words as used in the policy so as to afford the greatest protection to the insured.
If you follow that to its logical conclusion, anybody that comes within eyesight of a car and then is hit by it a little bit later is using it.
It
can't be just that broad. There's got to be more analysis than that.
I wouldn't follow it to that conclusion. I think that there are the facts are important. I think the facts of every specific accident and case are important. There's got to be some sort of interaction with the officer in this case and the car. We can't, if we're talking about a car that just comes in out of nowhere while she's directing somebody else, that's not necessarily a use. I think we have to pin it down to the specific facts of this accident.
Well, an officer at an intersection directs pretty much most of the cars that come and go if the lights are out, and that's why the officer is there. So that officer would be using every car that goes by, and the only one she would complain about is the one that runs over her foot or bumps into her or something.
Correct. And I think what's interesting about that is we have to go back and look at the type of policy that was bought and sold. It was a public entity policy that was sold to Milwaukee County.
Right.
And selling it, Wisconsin County Mutual. Obviously, they do, you know, they're in the business of this. They do the risks, the underwriting. They've got to understand and know who they're selling to. And they can say, well, look, here is a package of provisions here. This is what we're selling you. Milwaukee County should be able to say, look, this covers our officers in this type of situation. And if...
Why isn't the use of Lynch's car causing the municipal policy to become personal and portable to Officer Jackson?
Because it only works within the scope and course of her employment. It's not personable and portable because if Deputy Jackson leaves work and goes home and grabs dinner, to do a couple other errands, it doesn't follow her there. So the personal portable policy that would normally follow with the personal policy is not at issue in this case. The policy that's at issue is the one that's been procured by Milwaukee County.
If she she's off duty and she's at the airport, and she can see this person is lost and she knows Milwaukee, so she motions him over and does the same thing, gives the directions and everything, but she herself is going to go on her way back to her car. So she tells him, don't worry, I know how to direct traffic here, and I'll walk in front of your car and get you back in. Same thing happens. Is she using his car?
No, not if she's not on duty and in the scope and course of her employment.
Wow.
Well,
okay.
Well, don't you have to find out whether she's viewed by her employer as 24/7 before you answer that? If she's viewed as 24/7, it might be, but it might not be either. I want to know, is she in uniform? I mean, that's a good hypothetical.
Yeah. And I don't know if the question is if she's using, I don't think she would be an insured under the policy because she's not acting within the scope and course of her employment. So the pre-qualifier isn't necessarily there.
So she's not in it. Okay.
Right. But your question.
But she wouldn't be a user either if she's not an insured.
Correct. So Chief Justice also raised the point of whether you might need to know about if she's a 24-hour employee. The situation may be different if you're talking about something more in the collective bargaining where the officers are allowed to place themselves on duty for some different, for if they've come across an emergency or something of that situation. So it depends. If she happens to be there on the way back from a flight from somewhere warm, which is where I would like to be at this time, then, you know, that I think that's a case where it's going to be hard to find she's insured.
Now, do you agree with opposing counsel that you can substitute in 1A, this is on page 28 of the policy in the appendix, she says, we will pay all sums that the employee on duty using an automobile is legally entitled to recover. She's just substituting for insured the words in 2B.
I wouldn't agree with it for the whole entirety of the insured in terms of how the definition lays out, but as in 2B, yes.
Saying an employee in the scope of employment using, and we have to agree on using, right, that's...
Correct. And I think that's what the Court of Appeals found when it analyzed the textual argument of Wisconsin County Mutual. It found that the provisions of the UIM policy actually acted in tandem, and they had to interpret it together, and which that's essentially what they did, and they found coverage.
So what's the strongest case for you? And what's the worst case for you, against you?
I think right now the strongest case for me, I think, is the Garcia case, because we're talking there about a particular use of a vehicle. We're talking about somebody giving directions from, while that person's giving directions from the driver's seat while the car is on, we're talking about what the Court of Appeals decided there was that verbal cues and gesturing can constitute a use of the car. And I think that that can be easily applied to Rochelle Jackson here because that's what she was doing when she was using the lunch vehicle. Now, the worst case, I think, would probably be the case with the I'm trying to decide because I think most of the cases are positive for us in some regard, but I think the worst one would be the one with the homeowner. I believe that's Snaufer, where the homeowner, the kid was in the car, and they were vandalizing mailboxes. And during that interaction, they were knocking mailboxes down, and then the homeowner came out and shot a gun into the car and injured one of the passengers there. I think the court found that that wasn't particularly a use that was inherent with the use of a vehicle. They found that that was something that was a type of injury that didn't happen connected to a vehicle. I think that's probably the least persuasive case.
Garcia is gesturing to a child that it was safe to cross the street.
Correct, Garcia. That's, I think, our best case. I think it's the most applicable one to what we have here today.
Anything about the Court of Appeals decision that you don't think strikes a good note for you, that if you were going to rewrite it, you'd rewrite something else?
No, I think that the Court of Appeals, I think, handled the analysis pretty well. I mean, in terms of what they did, they looked at the law that we had out there, and they looked at how Garcia traced back to Thompson and Wobbler, and I think that that was an appropriate analysis. And I think they handled the contextual argument of Wisconsin County adequately as well, because they pointed out that the policy doesn't have any sort of specific exclusion or specific definitional exclusion, as I like to call them, that says that the type of vehicle that Deputy Jackson was injured by isn't one that's covered under the policy. And I think that they pointed out, they read the policy like it read to them, as a reasonable insured would say, and I think that they found that coverage was appropriate in that case.
The Tomlin case where the officer is stabbed.
Correct.
You have the Tomlin case and other cases where there are two factors, for lack of a better term. One is that you got the car, and somebody's driving it, somebody's using it, somebody's manipulating it, somebody's a passenger. And you have something else that causes the injury along with the car. There it was, the stabbing. And the court says, in these two-factor cases, court says, well, sure, the officer is using the car and standing next to it, et cetera, but, and so is the driver. But that isn't what hurt him. What really hurt him was this stabbing, and there's no real causal relationship between the car in the ultimate injury. And so although they sometimes talk in terms of use, they talk also in terms of a causal relationship. And that's how I think the courts get rid of the outlier cases that you can say are a use, but they're really not the cause or a substantial cause. Something else is really taking precedence. Now, maybe I'm not saying that right, but that seems to me you have to separate out those causal cases. And I don't know if you see it that way or you think that's just making it up or what the issue is.
No, I agree with you, Chief Justice. And those cases, the Tomlin-type cases, and as well as Stauffer, what those cases talked about were, they, in terms of causation, was they looked at where the causes of the injury were wholly independent of the use of the car. And now what the law has developed such that, and I think it started back in Wavler, and I think it's continued through the Thompson decision and Garcia, that it's not necessarily deciding whether something is a use of a vehicle. It does not have to be, it's not decided as a proximate cause type scenario. That's why we look at whether it's something that would be intended with the inherent use of a vehicle, and that's something that an insured would be expecting to pay for when they bought coverage.
You know, Counselor, your client had a right to workers' compensation for this injury, correct?
Correct.
So basically you have a third-party claim under the workers' compensation statute that you're bringing here, right?
There was a workers' compensation portion of the claim, yes.
Does that have anything to do,
thank you,
on this holding?
I'm sorry.
What does it have to do with this case?
It doesn't have, I don't think, necessarily much, except if you look at potentially the intent of what Milwaukee County might have thought it would have hoped to buy for. They probably would have hoped to buy for extra coverage so they're not going to have a higher workers' comp claim when they bought this underinsured motorist policy.
Well, do you have to share whatever you get with the workers' comp insurance company?
It sometimes pursuant to the formula, yes, but sometimes they're willing to make some agreements with you.
Judge Fine makes that argument about causation in dealing with the mailbox cases. So you agree with that? I'm going to ask opposing counsel about that.
Correct.
Okay.
Unless there are any further questions for me, I'm just going to simply ask and urge that you affirm the Court of Appeals decision.
And it's go back for trial then? Is that the
point? Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Correct. Thank you.
Binsky?
Yes. Thank you. I have just a few points. Number one, the notion that helping somebody to operate their vehicle is not use of a motor vehicle. It is implausible to suggest that a flagman who is holding a sign saying slow or stop is operating every motor vehicle that drives by. That is not a reasonable interpretation, nor is it consistent with the ordinary and reasonable use of the word using.
Counsel, in that case, do we have to overrule Garcia, or do you distinguish that?
I distinguish Garcia. Garcia was not decided based on the gestures. Garcia was decided based on the facts, and those facts did include a gesture, but they also included the fact that the gentleman was in the car with the car running, operating the vehicle. No, you do not have to withdraw or otherwise reverse Garcia.
But the language in Garcia suggests that incidental use, including gestures, that it doesn't, that, as you know, it doesn't require actual engagement of the transmission and moving it about, that a hand gesture, such as directing the child to cross the street, or is it possible directing an automobile back into traffic at Mitchell Field, is incidental use to be reasonably expected? How do we distinguish those two besides the fact? Because it didn't seem... It didn't seem like in Garcia that the court based its opinion on the fact that Renee was sitting behind the wheel of an idling Jeep. It seemed to base its fact on the hand gesture and the vocalization that it was safe for Crystal to cross the street.
I would agree that those were the facts that they based their decision. But the interesting part about Garcia, if you compare it to this case, is what they were doing is gesturing toward a pedestrian. And in this case, that the use is of the vehicle that's alleged. There is no gesture in this case, just so we're clear. There is no gesture. But to the extent Jackson did gesture to that vehicle, let's change the facts, gesturing into the Lynch vehicle to come. In that case, they didn't find that the operator was using, in essence, the pedestrian. They found he was using the vehicle he was in. That's what distinguishes that case from this case. I want to answer a couple of the questions. To answer Justice Rogancek's question, I believe it was your question, I think opposing counsel answered that incorrectly, and I just want to make sure everybody's on the same page. Workers' comp benefits, there's only rights of reimbursement for tort claims. This is a contract-based claim. So to be very clear and upfront, she does not have to pay back the workers' compensation lien because this is a contract.
That's right. Yeah. It's a different. Only a tort third-party tort claim requires payback. You're absolutely
correct.
Right.
Correct. So that answers that question.
The workers' comp has nothing to do with this case.
Workers' comp has nothing to do with this case in the sense of monetary. Correct. But the policy is a general liability policy, and so there's going to be coverage through comp, and there's coverage through the UIM, and it's the same insured that bought both coverages. So if you're looking at what would a reasonable insured, how would a reasonable insured who procured this policy interpret it, I think it is relevant in the sense that what would Milwaukee County think? They're thinking they're giving comp benefits to their employees, and they're also thinking that when their insured are using a vehicle and they're hit by another insured that's underinsured, they're going to have coverage for the limits under the policy.
So they want to protect their employees from being injured during the scope of their employment.
While using an automobile, yes.
But it doesn't have to be a county automobile.
That is 100% correct. The policy does not define the word using an automobile to be using a Milwaukee County automobile. Chief Justice, you asked one question about the Court of Appeals decision. They got that wrong. I mean, just to be 100% clear.
Well, I'm looking at that. Where do you think they got that wrong?
They said, and I don't have the page, I apologize, but they did say that this policy provides coverage to Milwaukee County vehicles. This is a general liability policy. There's no schedule of vehicles. It literally provides coverage for an insured, which in the UIM endorsement is defined.
I don't read it that way. I'm looking at paragraph 7. It says, further, we hold that the policy's phrase, while using an automobile within the scope of employment, does not require that the insured be using one of the automobiles, which is Milwaukee County, for which the policy was issued. So I think they got that right.
That sentence is correct as you read it. There is, and I apologize, I don't have the opinion right in front of me.
I don't have it memorized, but when I read it, I thought they had that one right, that you could be in any automobile is covered. It was not limited to a Milwaukee County automobile.
Yeah, I mean, and I see my time is up, so I will end unless there are any questions.
Is there anything else you think that the Court of Appeals got wrong other than the bottom line and everything?
Other than
between?
The bottom line, and there might be a statement to the effect of a schedule of vehicles or a listing of vehicles. This policy does not have a list of vehicles. It should be 100% up of it with that. Other than that, no. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Yet another case, which we've had several on, use of vehicles, and the contract, this case, that this court interprets most frequently of all contracts is the insurance policy. So thank you both for your briefs and your oral argument, Ms. Lubinsky and Mr. Scroben. And that concludes the argument in 12 AP 1644, Rachel R. Jackson versus Wisconsin Community Mutual Insurance Group. And am I right? It is about 2:40. There's a glare on that. The court will meet at approximately 3:05.
Chief, I have to speak to you.
I'm sorry. Yes. Justice Bradley has just reminded me to come out and speak with the Globe University people and ask that we extend it. I'll extend it to 3:15 so you get some time, too. All right. We are in recess until tomorrow, and we have 3 more cases.